You are listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. This is Series 2, Episode number 14 for Wednesday, 28th of December of 2022. This will be our last episode for the year. JJ Sefton here, along with my good friend CBD. CBD, how are you doing on this fine day?
I'm doing fine. We are at the tail end of, this terrible cold snap, you know, unprecedented historical cold snap. It got down to about 6 degrees here, which, by the way, is beautiful. You know, the night sky is incredibly crisp and clear. You can see the more stars than ever. And we've had weather certainly 10 degrees colder than this. And yet the hysteria from the increasingly effete and, you know, fear-mongering media is just ridiculous. I know that you are in up near the northern tier, and you had much, much, much colder weather, and I'm sure they handled it rather well in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, it was handled very well. This is, I mean, even my neighbor, who is a native here for many, many years, he was sort of saying, man, I've had it with this shit. But anyway, he was not happy about it. But it was, I mean, it was unusually cold. He says, we've had colder, but this is, it is cold. For me, I don't necessarily mind it so much. My house that we're in, I think we need to take a look at our insulation, because there are definitely cold spots in the kitchen where literally I have an ungloved hand in my kitchen and my hand feels like it's, you know, I'm outdoors. So we're going to take a look at that. But it's not, honestly, it's not that big of a deal. We had snow on the ground. It was icy and, you know, people stayed off the roads, or if you had to drive, you drove carefully. You drove 10 miles below, the speed limit so that you don't go sliding into anybody. So it's ridiculous. And I mean, of course, the ridiculous media, I think I saw a headline, and I can't remember the exact headline, but the nub of it, and this was at AOL, which is a joke, but the headline was, even frigid weather is indicative of climate change and global warming. And I'm going, it's ridiculous. It's you can't even. But of course, that's the meme. Everything is climate change and everything is global warming, despite the fact that you're freezing your patootie off here. And it is ridiculous.
It's embarrassing. My wife and I were walking in New York City yesterday for a few hours, and it was brisk and actually rather pleasant. It was a little overcast, but it was fun. And this is sort of a segue into a more depressing topic, and that is that the number of empty storefronts that I saw in what is called the Meatpacking District, which is on the west side of Manhattan, right around 14th Street, and which is also the location of the Whitney Museum, which is a New York art museum that is focused on American art. And we saw an Edward Hopper exhibition that was just spectacular. But I noticed a couple of things aside from the conspicuous empty storefronts in a very, very hip and relatively expensive part of Manhattan. And that is that the people, first of all, I noticed that they were shorter than I remembered New Yorkers to be. And that indicates to me that, you know, the melting pot is drawing shorter people. What that means, I really have no idea, but it was just an interesting observation, or at least I thought it was interesting. But also the number of relatively effete looking people was interesting. You know, New York City draws people from all over the world. And of course, a fair number of them are going to be, 4 foot, 8 inch tall, whatever. But the number of people who simply looked like they weren't quite sure that they were a man or a woman was disturbing to me. And that brought up a larger point. And that is that as the left takes control or attempts to take control over our way of life, as they become more authoritarian, it seems like along with that authoritarianism is coming this push away from traditional American masculine values. So none of these people build houses. They don't chop down trees. They don't build anything. They don't create anything of substance. And it seems like half of them are trannies or purple-haired non-binaries. And so the question is, in 20 or 30 or 40 years, who among them will be able to take over for the jackbooted thugs who enforce the orthodoxy now? And the answer to me is unclear. I simply do not know if they will have the physical power to do what is necessary to keep the rest of us in line.
As we discussed this before we started recording, if you go back to Nazi Germany, if you look at somebody like an Adolf Eichmann, the guy looks like, a terminal 4 cancer patient can beat the crap out of him, because he's just this little nebbishy a pencil pusher who wears an SS uniform. That said, the Germans had, you know, plenty of jackbooted thugs who were former SA men and Gestapo chiefs and so on and so forth, ready to do the worst. And indeed, they did do that in killing people in horrific ways, whether shooting them into mass graves or shoving them into gas chambers or what have you. But you're right, CBD. If you look at, you know, you look at the mugshots, the infamous mugshots that we see sometimes of the Antifa cadres who have the misfortune of being arrested and getting their pictures taken. These are the weirdest, freakiest looking nebbishy people with purple hairs and tattoos and nose rings. And, you know, they look like they couldn't even punch their way out of a wet paper bag. But as I said, they are only as powerful as corrupt law enforcement lets them be. I mean, after the 2020 season of the Summer of Love, where rioting was rampant all over the country, most of these people were never prosecuted, or if they were arrested, they were given basically a slap on the wrist and a little bit of a fine, as opposed to someone like Kyle Rittenhouse, who literally was defending his life from these people and was nearly sent to jail for it. So, yeah, I mean, who are the ones that are going to be the enforcers down the line? I don't see it. But somehow, you know, where there is some sort of will, there is a way. And I don't know that people are going to just be willing to sort of cheerfully and gleefully get on the trains and go to the fun camps if these people so deem it. So it is an interesting quandary. And of course, this parallels the situation in the military and in law enforcement, where there is this drive to make everything woke and everything transsexual and transgender and homosexual and out in the open and traditional American values and sort of merit and just physical strength, which we saw many years ago when fire departments started hiring women who just couldn't, you know, they couldn't keep up to it. So what did they do? They lowered the standards. So as these people refuse to, you know, don't want to enlist in the armed forces anymore, it's going to be interesting to see who does the enforcing.
Well, obviously the technological control over us is going to be hugely important. You know, control of the money supply, control of each transaction will become vitally important, because they'll, you know, we'll have social credit systems, and somebody who's a member of the NRA and reads Ace of Spades and listens to our podcast might very well have their funds limited. You can only spend $112 per day total because your social credit score is below a certain level.
You know,
but that is going to be much more important as we go into the future. I know that Joe Mannix wrote this morning in the morning rant about facial recognition and how that is a tremendously troubling issue being ignored by most people, because they see it as, oh, I couldn't get to go to the basketball game. But no, that's not the point. The point is that they know who the hell you are, and they're going to link you to everything you do. And they'll be able to control you that way.
But as we said, you know, as these systems of control are put in place, which no doubt they will be, there is just, I mean, the draw of it and the allure of it for those who have a will to power, it's easy to do, as we see in China. And in fact, the Chinese systems were actually developed by American technology, whether they stole it or whether willingly Google and Microsoft and all the other companies eagerly contracted it out to the red Chinese government. But that said, what is the tipping point of this? Is the American populace going to take that? And if indeed these, effete Arnold Stang looking, Gestapo officers are in charge or are going to be the police, are we just going to sit back and take it? And that just, you know, that at that point, it's societal dissolution and it's civil war. Because if you're going to deprive me of life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, or even food, shelter, clothing, and what have you, because of my political beliefs or because of my associations, at some point, I would think people are just not going to take that. Or are we just too programmed to not want to be confrontational and not want to fight if push comes to shove?
That's a great point. But we have seen glimmers of hope. I know that the school, what is it, Loudoun, Virginia?
Yes, Loudoun County.
Loudoun County, Virginia. They are pushing back, and the left does not like it. But the push is occurring, regardless of what the left wants. And I think that's very, very important. Is it enough? Who the hell knows? I mean, this is an ongoing theme on our podcast and in the conservative blogosphere. Is it too late?
Here's the thing, is that even if they are exposed, as Loudoun County exposed the collusion between the National Association of School Boards and the Department of Justice, all the way up to the Oval Office, colluded and conspired to literally go after parents who dared raise questions at school board meetings and label them as insurrectionists and terrorists, essentially, for opposing whether it's the transsexual agenda or critical race theory and so on and so forth. They will never stop. So they were exposed and they got their hand caught in the cookie jar, so to speak, but they never rest. They'll just figure out a way once all the kerfuffle blows over, they'll go right back at it, targeting people. Maybe they won't do it so overtly. They'll just figure out ways. Yeah, we're sorry we got caught. We'll figure out a way to do it so that we don't get caught, or at least to the point where it won't matter if we get caught, because, you know, you'll be under our thumb and that's the end of the day. But yeah, that is the story. I mean, it's an eternal struggle, I should say, between the forces of darkness and tyranny and people who just want to be left alone and just want to live their lives. But we can't have that, of course.
So the struggle against tyranny and darkness, that's interesting. If you look throughout history, tyranny and darkness wins a lot. But where on earth have they consolidated their wins? And I don't think that anywhere on earth have they consolidated their wins, perhaps with the exception of China.
Well, China, and also, you know, I hate to say it, I mean, Western society since the end of World War II, and really probably some might argue the end of the First World War, where all of these traditions and values and so on and so forth were put to the test, and people lost their faith. They started to have faith less in God and religion and in governments and a loosening of morals and so on and so forth. And I think this destruction, or this will to self-destroy, that the left has, I'm trying to put my words together here, but society has devolved to such an extent that all of these institutions, the questioning of Western civilization and literally several thousand years of history to get to this point, you know, is that's the enemy. It's like we are our own worst enemy, so to speak. I mean, the Red Chinese ultimately at some point will fail. Will they take us with them? Who knows? But they will fail, as Hitler did, as Stalin's Soviet Union failed, whatever you want to say about Vladimir Putin notwithstanding. But in order for it to fail, a lot of suffering has to happen, a lot of pain, and millions and millions of lives have to be destroyed, whether immediately or just by the existence of living just for, you know, an existence as opposed to living a productive life. So it is a constant struggle, but I think we are our own worst enemies. And as Lincoln said in his Lyceum speech, if America is to be destroyed, we are going to be the ones who sow our own destruction, so to speak.
I agree completely. You know, it's interesting what you said, the loss of faith. You know, if you go back to World War One and you see the loss of faith in Great Britain and in France, it's understandable. Entire generations of men were killed. They lost, you know, entire villages were destroyed because, you know, they used to create military units based on location. And there are towns in France and in Great Britain, primarily England, that have monuments to the fallen of World War One. And some of them say all, every single man from some little village in Yorkshire died at the Somme or, you know, some other horrible battle. And so the loss of faith from that perspective is understandable. And their reaction to the 20th century, after World War One, rather, is understandable. Is it acceptable? No. In the grand scheme of things, it was the wrong way to look at it. But the impetus is clear and understandable. You know, fast forward 100 years, and I look around our incredible society, and then I see people who dislike it. And there is no rational explanation for their dislike. It is the dissolution of man. And there is no other way to see it, because there was no catastrophic event such as the battlefields of World War One in these people's lives. Quite the contrary, they have led lives of wonder. They are the luckiest people on earth, and they don't see it. And that I simply do not understand.
It is self-doubt. It is the secular, the drive for the secular, for the, what is the expression they always use? It's my truth, like truth, as if truth is a you know, the object, as opposed to is a completely subjective thing, and it isn't. I don't necessarily believe in absolutes, but there is truth and there is things that are lies. And it is this push to, well, it's people taking advantage of self-doubt and obviously the school systems and taking all the mistakes that America has made and our sins, which we have had sins, of course, but using those sins to define us as opposed to the act of, you know, rebelling against the tyrannical king to start a free society. Now, did slavery exist? Of course it existed. But the men who wrote the Declaration of Independence and who wrote the Bill of Rights had it in their mind to set in motion a government that would eventually have to abolish slavery. They couldn't, you know, they had, we had to include two states of the colonies that didn't want to do it, and we had to accommodate them. But this is what the left does. They take our flaws and they use it as weapons to demean us and to say how horrible we are, when it's the overcoming of these things that really does define us. And that's the sad truth. So it's self-doubt. It's whether it's, you know, ingrained in us somehow, or if it's, you know, more like propaganda in the schools. This is what's leads to the dissolution of Western society, the rise of people like of megalomaniacs. It makes it easy, like people like Klaus Schwab and Hans-Jörg Wyss and George Soros and Bill Gates and on and on and on. They take advantage of this propaganda that has been with us really since the time of Stalin to use against us, as Lenin called people who are his allies in this, they're useful idiots. And they, you know, they believe this thing, hook, line, and sinker. And it's this will be our undoing, or it'll more people will realize what is happening and fight against it, as the parents at Loudoun County, Virginia, and elsewhere. Please God.
And you know, I see this as more and more acceptable an answer, and that is that the geographical realignment of the United States, which is, I think, happening. I wrote about it recently on Ace of Spades. I think it was yesterday, or maybe on Sunday. I don't remember. But the idea that people are simply going to disengage from those people whose entire mindset, whose entire worldview is anathema to everything that we believe, and we'll move, and they'll move. And, you know, maybe in a couple of generations, we will have a cold civil war that ends with the creation of another America. I don't know that it can be bloodless, but perhaps that is the best end that is possible. I don't know.
My only fly in the ointment to that theory, which it may very well come to that, is that the left can never accept the fact and will never let us alone. Even if we were to have a society and another America, the conservative America as founded, were to be on the opposite side of the universe, somehow they would construct a spacecraft to get to the other side of the universe to kill us, because they have to, because they have built their entire worldview around the fact that we are evil and everything we do is a failure and prevents the establishment of a paradise on earth, a socialist workers' paradise where there is no government and so on and so forth. So when we start succeeding, when American industry, when we're drilling for oil where we can drill for it, where our farming and we are yielding bumper crops out the wazoo, and these people are in California and New York shivering in the cold and in darkness with poisoned water and crime and rat-infested sewers overflowing, they can't allow that to happen. Because what it does is it stands in sharp contrast to everything that they will implement, open borders and so on and so forth. And as their society fails, we will flourish. So they can't allow that to happen. It would be not only because we would be flourishing and they can't control us, but because everybody who is within their iron curtain, so to speak, of California and New York, who want to escape but who probably will not be able to, you know, will see it for themselves, and it will just destroy the illusion of leftist progressivism. So they can't allow us to exist. I don't know that, you know, if we do separate, what will happen. I mean, I look at it this way. I think it's the most reasonable course of action. The only other way to do that is to literally declare a hot civil war and to conquer. One of us comes out the victor and the other one is vanquished. So,
you know, it's interesting. You see what you're talking about, the inability of the left to just leave us alone. California is famous for setting unrealistic restrictions on the food that is imported into California from outside. Now, because it is such a huge market, they have a tremendous amount of power. You know, but telling an Iowa pig farmer that his pigs need 100 square feet of field per pig, it's unrealistic. It simply doesn't work that way.
How is the California Department of Agriculture bureaucrat going to know that it's that there's 100 feet of space for each pig in Iowa? Was he going to fly out there and look at it? I thought
mostly
Iowa. Yeah, well, or not, because they said we're boycotting Iowa.
But that's why the marginal tax rate in California is 13.3% or some ridiculous number.
Yeah, it is.
And actually, New York City tries that. They've tried that with foie gras, which is, you know, the duck liver that is, of ducks that have been fattened. And they're force-fed the food to fatten their livers. But since ducks don't have a gag reflex, it sounds unpleasant, but it really isn't unpleasant. In fact, if you go to a foie gras farm, you will see the ducks line up to be fed this way. They do that without being forced. Anyway, New York State has continuously, the courts in New York State, and even the Department of Agriculture in New York State has told New York City they can't ban foie gras. It's illegal. And they keep trying it, and they keep banning, and they keep getting slapped down. But they don't give a shit. They'll just keep trying and trying and trying. And maybe eventually they'll be able to succeed. But it's as you said, the inability of the left to simply leave us the fuck alone.
Right. I mean, well, look what happened with the Bruin decision and versus the New York Gun Club when, you know, basically concealed carry was, you know, the court slapped down this egregious gun control law in New York State. What did they immediately do? Go around the Supreme Court and try to enact all kinds of ridiculous rules while saying, well, we respect the Supreme Court, but all these ridiculous rules which completely fly in the face of obeying a Supreme Court ruling to try to continue gun control and to continue to wipe out concealed carry. So it's like they don't care. I mean, you know, that's why they try to control the courts. That's why they try to control every aspect of government, and now are trying to control every aspect of private so-called society and the free market, such as it is, to implement laws that they could never ever get away with if they ran on them as a ticket. So again, as I said, the evil never rests, tyranny never rests. They will always try to go after us, and if we do somehow manage to separate, they won't leave us alone. Now, if they don't leave us alone, well, what, as we said, are they going to get the pimple-faced maggots who are 90-pound weaklings to come and invade New York and Florida, or rather invade Florida and Texas from New York and Portland? I mean, that'll be an interesting thing to see, considering we're, you know, the rest of the country is what, 200-odd million people armed with however many million firearms and rounds of ammunition. So, you know, bring it on, suckers.
You know, interesting, you bring up the Bruin gun control case and New York getting absolutely destroyed by the federal courts when they tried to circumvent the very clear Supreme Court holding. Well, New York got slapped down and New Jersey just did exactly the same thing. I think it was on last Thursday. They voted an absolutely ridiculous set of laws in place. I read through the law, and as far as I can tell, I can no longer carry anywhere in New Jersey other than maybe I can walk up my – I can't get into my car because I am not allowed to carry in my car. But I can walk up my street. However, if I pass the church on the left side of the street, which is up about a third of a mile, I think I might be in violation of the law, and it's a felony. So, you know, the stupidity of New York is rivaled or perhaps – surpassed by the stupidity of the state of New Jersey. But they don't care. They'll keep trying, and they'll keep trying, and they'll keep trying. Anyway, we've run past our break, so folks, stay tuned. We'll be back in a second.
And we're back, JJ Sefton, CBD, with the final episode for the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast for 2022. And once again, the password is hypocrisy. We seem to have a rep who was just elected out of Long Island, a man by the name of George Santos, and he is a GOP congressman elect. And lo and behold, it has been discovered that he embellished his resume quite a bit, claiming that he had worked for Goldman Sachs, I believe, and that turns out to be, what's for lack of a better word, a lie, and who has also claimed himself to be Jewish. But as he defended himself, I'm not Jewish, I'm Jew-ish. So I guess he's Jewish-ish. And so the question is, everybody is jumping down this guy's throat to be investigated. And what's really egregious is the loudest voices calling for his investigation and even his ouster are his own party. It's the GOP out of Long Island. And they're all, you know, they're all getting their hair on fire over this and heading for the fainting couches that this guy lied to them. Oh, my God. Meanwhile, you have people in the Democrat Party, such as Ilhan Omar, who I affectionately known referred to as the Brofo, who basically broke federal immigration laws by marrying her brother and essentially engaging in incest to come into this country, let alone people like Joe Biden, who has spent the last 50 years lying and plagiarizing and lying about his plagiarism and so on and so forth. And even if you go into the media, knuckleheads like Brian Williams, who is basically the Commander McBragg of the media. And Hillary Clinton's infamous episode of encountering sniper fire when she was landing in Bosnia, which, of course, never happened. But these people never suffer, and we have to ignore that fact, and it's nothing, it's a nothing burger. But this guy, George Santos, who claims he's Jewish and he claims he worked for Goldman Sachs when he isn't, you know, he has to be run out on a rail for obvious reasons. And as I said, you know, if considering the Democrat Party's official position of anti-Semitism, that is, that they're in favor of it and promoting it, I would like to see George Santos commended for his bravery of claiming to be Jewish in the face of all of this.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's wonderful. I think it's great. Yeah. He's claiming to be a Jew. He's claiming to be gay. He's claiming to be wealthy. He's claiming to be also – I mean, I'm looking at the – I mean, admittedly, it's Wikipedia, so I apologize for going to probably the worst source on the internet. But he's claiming all sorts of stuff, apparently none of which is true, which I think is absolutely fantastic. I think it's great. And the only reason I think it's great is because if he actually gets to hold on to his seat, I am going to quote Winston Churchill, and that is, quote, "If Hitler invaded hell, I would make at least a favorable reference to the devil in the House of Commons," unquote. Hey, as long as he is going to vote against the leftist agenda, I don't care. I am so far beyond the idea that the Republican Party should be the party of integrity and honesty. It is obviously not. And I'll say two words, Mitch McConnell, to disabuse you of any notion that it was ever or has been in the last 25 years the party of integrity. But as long as he votes Republican, which means possibly voting against some of the most egregious leftist attempts at destroying our country, I'm in. I don't care if he's a liar. I don't care if he's a serial liar. I don't care if he's fabricated his entire life. I don't care if he's a Muslim. I don't care if he's a fundamentalist Christian. I don't care, as long as he votes against the left.
You know something, CBD? I will raise you your Mitch McConnell by a Mitt Romney and a Liz Cheney and call. There is no, I mean, my God. So it's a sad state of affairs when we openly see our government as so, and the people in it, with very, very rare exceptions in it, holding on by their fingernails as just an absolute den of scum and thievery and you name it. And just the egregious banana republic bullshit that goes on in that chamber. There was a great clip of Chip Roy just absolutely going off on the Democrats in the well of the House there about this $1.7 trillion budget and all this money going to Ukraine when the left is accusing Republicans of not wanting to negotiate, when they're not even they're prevented from even raising any kind of objections to the pork that's in this disgusting rape of our children and our children's futures. So yes, anyone who goes in there, I don't care what he says, if they're going to vote against any of this stuff, then what's the problem? There is no problem. So it's just the hypocrisy is just so egregious and radiant that it just makes your hair hurt, or what's left of my hair hurt, I should say. So yes, I say, you know, not only I say George Santos should remain, and not only that, to hell with Kevin McCarthy. I think he should be elected majority leader.
Absolutely. Santos for Speaker of the House.
Speaker of the House. Absolutely, yeah, baby. Why not?
Why so you not? bring up Ukraine and this obscene lie that Ukraine is in the forefront of America's consciousness, and it simply isn't, and everybody knows that. I'm so put off by Mitch McConnell and his lies and his bullshit and his obfuscation and his obvious desire to keep the fire burning under Ukraine for as long as possible for reasons. I mean, I guess you could argue that it is good for the military industrial complex. Yeah, sure it is. I don't think it's that much money for them because probably most of it is going to be lost through graft. But
well, absolutely. I mean, look, somebody mentioned, I hate to interrupt you, and it's Rush Limbaugh many years ago mentioned, union dues. And what do the union dues do? The union dues go into the coffers of the Democrat Party. It's a kickback. And it's the same thing with this $1.7 trillion. All of this pork somehow is going to find its way back into the Democrat Party's coffers as kickbacks or the big guys 10%, so to speak. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's no problem. My point was that I am rapidly moving toward the stance that anything for Ukraine is bad for America. So I am possibly, I'll say it. I want Putin to win because it'll end the hemorrhaging of money into Ukraine. And if Putin wins, then we'll stop pissing away money in Ukraine. And maybe the graft will slow somewhat, because what happens if Ukraine wins? What do we get from that? We get more expense because Ukraine will now go to the United Nations and say, we need to be rebuilt to the tune of $1 trillion. And the brunt of that cost will be borne by the American taxpayer. No, actually not the American taxpayer. The American taxpayer's great grandkids. And is that good for America? No, absolutely not. It's terrible for America. So you heard it here first, folks. Go Putin.
As I once quipped, I'm rooting for Putin. Look,
yep.
the guy's an evil. Look, I have no love lost for the guy. He's a sick tyrant and a former KGB who mourned the fall of the Soviet Union as a catastrophe. But that said, I mean, this is not our fight. We should not be. You know whose fight this is? This is West Germany's fight. This is Poland's fight. This is West Germany. Did I say West Germany? My God.
Yes, you did. My God, you're dating yourself.
It's Germany's fight. It's Poland's fight. It is Hungary's fight. It is France's fight. It is Italy's fight. And it is not our fight. It is their fight. It's on their border. And hell, it's on their, he's the one that's cutting off their energy because these idiots went for the green fairy tales and windmills and unicorn farts as opposed to oil and coal. And they're beholden to him, but it is not our fight. And so, look. And with the other hypocrisy of this whole thing is, I think he's getting how many hundreds or billions of dollars are being thrown at you at Zelensky, billions and billions of dollars. And when Donald Trump asked for a measly $10 billion to build a border wall, the left went crazy and said, we can't afford it. And I'm just going, you have got to be effing kidding me, boys. I mean, this is ridiculous. And speaking of the border, I mean, if you want to go there, if we can segue into it, at least the Supreme Court put on hold temporarily the abandonment of the last fig leaf of protecting our borders of Title 42. So, I mean, this is just – it's egregious. The whole thing is just the corruption. But George Santos, there it is. He's got to go. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get back to Title 42. The reality on the border, unfortunately, is that only a small percentage of these people are being sent back. The majority of them are being released anyway. So Title 42 is a big deal politically, but I don't think in reality it means that much. The border is open. Whether there is a temporary choke point somewhere, and they use Title 42 to slow the flood. Yeah, sure. But the border is open, and we can't pretend that it is anything other than uncontrolled. And the invasion continues apace.
We do have a de facto open border, absolutely. But I think the erasure of Title 42, or the abolishing of it, or however rescinding of it, however you want to call it, I think that would send an official signal to everybody, to every peasant below the Rio Grande, to come on in. It's now official policy. I think that gives it the the good housekeeping seal of approval that America has no borders and you can come on in and register for all of Uncle Sugar's benefits and of course register to become a Democrat. So it's important, at least, I guess, symbolically, to keep it in place that there is some law that says you just can't cross the river and come here and claim I'm a citizen and just not be deported. So at least it's something. And again, this is only a temporary, temporary situation.
Yes.
I think sometime in the Supreme Court is supposed to argue the thing come the new year. And of course, I expect fully John Roberts and the usual suspects to cave. But that's my optimism right there.
Ah, cheery, cheery, cheery. All right, let's take another break, and we'll be back to close out the year with hopefully something a little bit more cheery than a flood of illegals across our southern borders.
You read my mind. Back in a flash. Back to the final segment of the final podcast of 2022 for the Cut Jib Newsletter Speech Radio Network, JJ Septon and CBD. And the focus now is back to Iran, where really we are entering, I believe it's the 100th day or just over the 100th day of massive protests around the country, which were sparked by, and please forgive me, I forget this poor woman's name, a woman who was murdered by the religious police for daring to walk around with showing a bit of ankle or not wearing her burqa. The potential now really, I think, maybe greater than ever for the mullahs to really, the mullahocracy to really crumble. You have them lashing out more and more against both soccer stars and international media figures who are being imprisoned and tortured. And I believe they actually killed a sports figure. They arrested him and hanged him for saying some sort of trumped up charge. I forgot what it was, but the potential, from what I understand, is there now more than ever for the mullahocracy to finally, after nearly 44 years, to really go to the ashbin of history. Please God.
I'm a little bit more sanguine about the issue. I think that there is insufficient support from the West for the mullahs to fall. I think they will be weakened, and the next spasm of violence in Iran might kick it up a notch, as they would say. But the support from the United States is conspicuous in its absence, and the support from Western Europe is conspicuous in its absence. And, it must be depressing for an Iranian dissident who sees the things like Black Lives Matter that exploded worldwide. You get knuckleheads in France kneeling to support who the hell knows. And yet when real support could help in Iran, it simply does not occur. And that's sad. And that's an indictment of Western culture or postmodern Western culture. That being said, I sure hope that the mullahs start getting hanged from lampposts all over Tehran. That would be a delightful, delightful way to end 2022 or begin 2023. I'll wait.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, look, it's, who knew? It was the beginning. It was not nearly 3 years ago when this the terror chief and President Trump, God bless him, dispatched. And that kicked off what we thought was going to be a banner year, but of course devolved into the COVID nightmare that turned everything upside down, turned the world and turned our country upside down. But again, these are glimpses of hope. And if the glimmers of hope come from abroad, I mean, it does, as we back to Churchill, warm the cockles of the heart. And hopefully the cockles of the heart will be warmed by a burning Khamenei hanging upside down from a Tehran lamppost. That would be nice. But of course, the regime doesn't want that to happen. There is no help from them because they're pro-Iran. They're anti-Israel. They're anti-West. And so supporting Iran in their mind is despite the delusion of not seeing who they are for what they are, it's this delusion that it's sort of, you know, we need to do that because we need to keep Israel in check and we need to keep America in check and all this other rot gut, which is exactly what it is. Supposedly now there was
fascinating though the yeah. disconnect from the logic of the region. Iran as a foil, as a balance against Israel. Yes, technically that is correct. Israel is focused on Iran because Iran is an existential threat to the region. The reality, though, if you expand that short-sighted view of it, is that the entire Arab world, or at least the entire Sunni world, and actually, let's be fair, some of the Shia world, is terrified of Iran. And they will gleefully, happily join arms with Israel against Iran to prevent the mullahs from doing what they want to do, which is begin Armageddon. Because in their warped and psychotic worldview, that is the precursor to, who the hell knows, an Islamic theocracy in the world and the 12th Imam and other lunacies. But back in the United States, if you look at the anti-Semitism inherent in what support for Iran signals, it still doesn't make any sense. Because Iran is our enemy. Iran is the enemy of America. And why they support an enemy of America just doesn't make any sense.
Well, the thing is, the left sees America as the enemy. So there it is.
But even the postmodern America, Iran is vehemently opposed to. So
the left puts a blind eye to things that the inconvenient truths, to coin a phrase, that they don't want to see. They see them. They look at Iran and they see American imperialism as imposing the Shah and overthrowing Mossadegh. And so this is good. Islam has been as an oppressed people, an oppressed religion that Jews and Christians for thousands of years have oppressed, and they need to be elevated in the world while Judeo-Christianity needs to be subsumed, and so on and so forth. So this fits in perfectly with their worldview, but again, as warped and twisted as it is. But that explains why they, I think, in part, at least in part, or a big part of why they support Iran and why they want them to have nuclear weapons, and regardless of the fact that they're going to use it to blow up the world to create paradise on Earth. Where have we heard that one before? Two sides of the same rotten coin, Islam and progressivism. But there you have it. And on that note, actually, I just saw that supposedly the administration has finally admitted that the alleged resuscitation of the joint, the JCPOA nuke deal with Iran is supposedly dead, although I'll believe that. I'll believe it when I see it. So
yeah, but we'll see. I wonder what's going to happen there. I'm sure they're going to do something underhanded, some administrative change that will allow some of these funds to flow back to Iran.
Well, look at it this way. Maybe they see something there that they don't want to send the pallets of cash for fear that it actually might fall into the wrong hands, but would be the right hands, which would be the people, as opposed to the malocracy. So maybe they're holding back. Could be a good sign. Who knows?
Oy.
Yeah. Anyway, on that note, I just want to say just my final thoughts on the year and on the podcast and on Kutchib newsletter and Ace of Spades is a big thank you to all our supporters and all our commenters and everyone who's really helped us grow and supported us through the years, and especially those of you people out there who've hit the tip jar so generously. We really, really, really appreciate it, and helps keep the lights on and helps keep us going. And I also want to thank you, CBD, and all our co-bloggers and guests here, like Misanthropic Humanitarian and Joe Mannix and Dave in Florida and Jay Guevara, for being with us. And we will endeavor to have you on in the future, along with guests like Michael Walsh and Robert Spencer and others. So thank you all for your continued support, and have a blessed new year ahead, and hope for better days.
And I'd like to echo that. Thank you very much, folks. Without you, we would not be able to do this. And it's a labor of love, but with your help, it doesn't have to bankrupt us. Let's put it that way. It really has been a pleasure. And I think in 2023, I'm going to refocus my attention on the positive. I realize that it's very, very difficult to do that in light of so many of the so many losses that we have incurred over the last couple of years, but there have been successes. And if we build upon those successes, I think that we still have a chance to resuscitate this incredible and amazingly successful experiment that is America. And you folks are a part of it. And, well, once again, thank you. And to Sefton, thank you very much, my friend. It's been a blast. I will see you in 2023.
Absolutely. Everybody have a blessed new year and see you next year.
Thanks for listening, folks.